This podcast episode is brought to you by my very own free training, and it's all about how to plan your profitable leap without the confusion. In this training, I'm going to be teaching you the different types of pricing strategies for service-based business owners, and so that you can find the one that's right for you, teaching you what to consider and how to price your services for profit, how to understand your risk tolerance and plan accordingly for your ultimate leap, learn how to break down your financial goal into actionable steps so that you know exactly how many hours clients you need in order to reach your goal so that you can make your leap sooner. And bonus, I'm going to teach you my calendar blocking method so you can designate certain chunks of time to your clients and work so you can fast track your ultimate leap. To learn more and sign up for this free training, you can head on over to shedidithowaypodcast.com/training. Again, it's shedidithowaypodcast.com/training. Welcome to the She Did It Her Way podcast, where it's all about making the ultimate leap from your 9 to 5 and building a business and life you love, all while doing it your way. I'm your host, Amanda Bolin. Let's get started. Hello, my beautiful friends, She Day. Oh my gosh, we're just going to leave that in there. She Did It Her Way listeners. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited for you guys to tune into today's episode as the lovely Miss Emily Hirsch is on the line. She is the founder of Hirsch Marketing, and her story is absolutely incredible. We first met at Kick-Ass Mastermind Live, hosted by Sarah Christensen, who was a previous guest a few months ago on the podcast. So if you haven't tuned into that, highly recommend doing so. But Emily actually spoke, and I was so lucky to have her at my table, and her story is incredibly inspiring, and I'm excited for her to come on and not only share her story, but talk a little bit about what she dives into with her clients around Facebook advertising, because I think Facebook, and including myself, is a little overwhelming at first, but I know, Emily, after San Diego, you really broke it down, and I was like, okay, I can definitely do this, but I'm going to stop talking, and I'm going to let Emily say hello.
Hi. Yeah, I'm so excited. I had so much fun meeting you at that event, and our table was super awesome and fun. I feel like there was so much great advice shared there, so I'm so excited to do this.
Yay. Well, listen, why don't you share, take us back to like when it all got started, and your husband owned online business, and you kind of like ran just about everything. So take us all the way back. And, but first tell us actually, where are you today in your own words? What is it that you do?
Yeah. So I own a marketing company. We do Facebook and Instagram ads and high level marketing strategy specifically for influencers and people in the digital marketing space. So I have a team of 31 and we serve over 65 clients doing that.
That's so amazing. Okay. And like, take us back when you first started. What were you doing? How did you even get into this online space? And give us that timeline so we know where we're at and where we're going.
Yeah. So I started my company about 4 years ago, and I have always been an entrepreneur, like a crazy entrepreneur. So I do have it kind of in my blood to build a business, and I just don't know any other way. I've never had a job. So at the time I was in college and I was a nanny and I was actually pregnant. I was 19 and I got pregnant. So I fell into the world of actually becoming a virtual assistant because I was good at like admin stuff and tech stuff, and I could do it virtually, which was perfect because I was going to have a baby and I wanted to be able to work. And so I kind of fell into this world and basically said yes to everything. So pretty soon I knew like literally every platform, like Entreport, Fusionsoft, ClickFunnels, and I was like super valuable VA, which all that still comes in handy today because I know all those platforms. But I just dove into that with clients. And then, yes, my husband, he teaches kettlebell training. And he was actually a personal trainer for like 15 years. And I wanted to explore like what would it be like if we took stuff online, because you're just like trading your time one-on-one with clients, which is not efficient. And I'm all about efficiency. So yes. He, at the same time, was creating all this content. And he's like an amazing content creator and super great at what he does, but he's not necessarily the level of an entrepreneur of me. So I also had that company to kind of like guinea pig and play with at the same time. And they were almost like a client of mine. So with that virtual assistant work, it kind of channeled into marketing. And so I started doing more specific marketing stuff for clients and then Facebook ads. And then I was doing that for our company. And so that became the only thing that I offered. I loved it. I was like consuming as much content as I could about it and learning it myself. But really, I learned so much from the experience of actually trying it. And even still today, like people ask me how I educate my team, and it's like we just go and test things and then we share it with each other and we bring back the data. And that's like honestly one of the best ways to learn. So that's what I did myself. I built it up to like 15 probably clients on my own, doing Facebook ads, like doing it all myself, and then was like, okay, if I want to keep growing, I have to build a team. That was about 2 years ago now that I really started building a team. I had no idea what I was doing, and that has been the biggest journey for me. And I've gone from, you know, zero employees. Just over a year ago, I had like all contractors, zero employees, to like 23 or four right now employees and contractors. And so that's been my focus for the last year and a half, was is training my team so we can serve more clients.
Yeah. Well, and I definitely, earlier when you were saying how you basically, your team tests everything and then you come back and you take all the data, but you also share that on your podcast episode, which I highly recommend for anyone tuning into this episode and this interview to go check out, Emily's podcast, which we'll link into the show notes. I love it. It's 15 minutes, roughly. So it's really bite-sizable actions, whether it's about marketing online, Facebook ads, like you guys are so open with what it is that you do. And I love the interviews that you do with your team because it's really insightful to hear how your team is executing and just how you're growing as a business owner. How would you, I mean, okay, so you were nannying, you're in college, you're 19 and you're pregnant and you're doing all this virtual assistant work that then transitioned, you found this love for Facebook ads. And then 2 years ago you had zero employees and now you're sitting at 24 employees. What? I mean, I have so many questions. I mean, I was like so amazed in San Diego. I'm like, I can't even think straight right now because I have so many questions that I want to ask her, not even just about Facebook, but just what is going on inside of that brain and what has really like, talk to us about your mindset. And was it something that you had to work on or was it just naturally kind of there? And it's something that's already on autopilot that you do so well that if I'm asking you this question, you're like, what are you talking about? This is just how it is. Does that make sense?
It's a little bit of both. Like I naturally am a leader. I can naturally put things like into chunks and pieces to train people to do what I want and like delegate. And I'm good at that. But obviously too, like I've never done this before. So I've had to learn a ton. And again, I really feel like it's experiences. And so I think one of my skill sets that's helped me so much is I never really see things as like a huge failure or a mistake. And I also, like, I don't see it with my team either. So if something happens, like we just actually had this happen yesterday. There was like an issue with a client. We got an email with like all these bullet points. Some of them were out of line. Some of them were, you know, from the client. And you know, a lot of people might just immediately be like, oh my gosh, they're so wrong. And like, let me get really defensive about that. And to my team, I don't get mad and punish my team because I know the person and like the situation. But I look at that as like, okay, what exactly can we learn from this? Let's break it apart. There are chunks in here that we can learn from. And so whether it's me that's doing it, whether I'm doing that with my team. And so I've had a lot of experiences where I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm just like going forward and figuring it out. And then I learn and then I pivot and I fix it. And so that's been a big piece of like, I think a natural ability that I have to do that. And then I also think that I don't have an issue with ego of being like, I'm the leader, I'm the boss, I'm right. And so I've hired a lot of people who are much older than me, have a lot more experience than me, and I listen to them. And like, I'm like, you tell me what we need to do here to get to the end result. And so I think that matters too. And that has helped me a lot, is hiring people to help them get me where I want to go.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I gathered from that is that it sounds like you typically like you just remove the emotion out of it. You don't make things mean any certain thing aside from looking at the actual facts at hand. And I think for a lot of us, it could be easy to look at a failure and then make it mean that I'm a failure. And I always share with the audience and anyone that, you know, if you do something and the data comes back and it's not necessarily the outcome that you want, like it's up to you to decide how you want to make it mean, but also understanding like the emotions involved in removing yourself and being consistent. Like that was one of the things that I found and observed in San Diego was that you're just so, you come off, whether this is true or not, I don't know. And you can tell us, but like so consistent and grounded and just very like matter of fact in the sense that like, this is what it is and here, what are we going to do? What's the plan? Yeah. And not get caught into the weeds of the drama being like, oh my gosh, that failed. And you know, you just think about it. And that I actually had to learn, like I was super high and low emotions because that was sort of the household that I grew up in. And that was one of the things that I definitely had to work through. So I share that in the sense that if anyone's listening and they find themselves to be on the other side of the spectrum where they are emotional, like that is definitely something that you can work on and exercise that. What would you say, like your rapid growth, and I'm trying to come at a very curious standpoint, but I've listened to like mainly almost every single podcast episode. So I'm like, I feel like I kind of know the answer, but I don't want to assume. So like 2 years ago, your rapid growth from zero employees to 24, what was the first step that you did when you're like, oh my gosh, I need to start outsourcing this stuff? Like, did you have a vision for a multi-million dollar company, or was it just, you're kind of like unveiling the yellow brick road bit by bit?
I definitely had the vision. Like I knew I was going to be able to make $1 million and actually pretty, like I got to definitely well over six figures on my own.
Yeah.
And then started really hiring people once I was almost at $1 million, and it happened faster than I thought. So I had that vision, but I will be honest here. Like when I went to go hire my team, I had no idea what I was doing. And I was terrible in the beginning. Like I was so drowning in work and opportunity for clients on my own that I literally would just find people in a Facebook group and like, you're awesome. Come, will you please help me? Like literally that is what I did. I didn't like have an interview process. I didn't have a training process. And then like the way they learned was they just watched me on Zoom because I didn't have time to train them. So that's a mistake. Like, don't do that if you are in a phase where you're just starting to hire your team. But that is literally what I did. So I was not perfect at all. And I had to basically like go back once I had hired those initial, well, the first person I hired was like a VA, just to try to help to get me like whatever they could help me with. But then I tried to hire an ads manager, like, cause I just was overloaded in client work. And so I needed help there. So I think like your first hire is how do you buy back yourself the most time? And so it's whatever you're spending the most time doing, get help doing that. And so for me, it was actually sales calls and client work. And so I tried to bring in help for that first. And you know, the ads manager, I had this like thought that I had to hire people and like train them from the ground up. And later on I realized I don't know why I thought that. And now I hire people with like 2, 3, 4, 5 years experience.
Yeah.
So we train them on our process, but we're not like, here's the ads manager. And you know, like that's ridiculous. But I did train somebody from the ground up. She had no experience. She was an amazing person and had great drive. Like, so that's one thing is I really try to find high performers because you can do so much with them. Like my team is all high performers, but I had to go back and put in systems. Like I didn't start that way because I was too busy. And I was just drowning and I didn't know what I was doing. So I had to, a lot of my work in the last year and a half has been going back and refining our training and our interview process and all of that, because there's no way I could have kept scaling that the way I was doing it.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you find, cause I was going to ask you, I mean, so you went back and you had to put in systems because you were growing so fast. When it was just you in the beginning, did you find that you, when it was just you growing so fast and then also going back in and putting in processes, like was that process kind of the same? Have you found it to be where you know, you're kind of, you have to like accelerate fast, do things, get it out, and then go back and refine? Or is that something that you think is something that can be planned? And the reason why I'm asking is because I've found, and what I'm learning is that especially in the early stages, it's a lot of like moving two different parts at once. So
yeah,
you're kind of just getting it out there and then coming back. Have you found it to be the same thing when it's just yourself? And then obviously now even with a team, it's the same case.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's lessons that you have to go through in the beginning of business and from like zero to six figures, especially that you can't really plan for because you have to actually like experience it and make the mistakes and realize what you need. And so, yeah. And I think also you need to prove what you have. You know, you don't want to spend all this time putting in systems because really you're not going to know what systems and processes you need until you're like in the thick of it. And you're like, okay, here's our gap here and here's our gap here. So I think, you know, as much as people love to plan, and even myself included, you can't plan for the things that are going to happen in business a lot of times, like, because it's depending on, you know, customer feedback or team feedback or whatever it is. And so, however, I do think there's a part in business where you get that momentum and like you've proven what you're offering and it's speeding up and you're overwhelmed. And the best thing you can do is spend time slowing down for a month or two just to go put in those systems and processes once everything's proven, you know, especially in like the service industry that I'm in. Like, there were months where I was like, we're full. We can't take on another client because if we do, it's going to be a nightmare. And so I need to put in these systems and then we can take on more clients. I hate doing that because I never want to say no to, you know, the right clients, but I did have to do that sometimes because we had to, you know, slow down to put the processes in. And I think a lot of people experience that.
Yeah. And it's such a good reminder too that, well, and I think it, you know, thinking about different stages of business in the beginning, it's so easy to focus like major on the minor things where you are, like you were saying, it would be so easy to spend time building processes and thinking that's the most important thing. But really what's most important in the beginning is generating revenue and getting clients in the door, where then at other stages, you're like, okay, we're at max capacity. And the only way that we can be more efficient is if we kind of turn off the lever, go back, optimize what we already have. And then even though it's quote unquote slower now, it's going to help us go faster later on. Kind of like an oil change, I guess. Okay, cool. So that was with the first hiring. Now, is there anything that stands out to you that really looking back has accelerated this like rapid growth in the 2 years that you like, are there two, three things that you would really attribute that growth to?
Yeah, for sure. Like straight to my mind, I would say focus. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, entrepreneurs have a lot of ideas and I definitely have the visionary ideas. I could tell you like five great business ideas right now, probably that I could create, but you know, and I did have even like a idea, like I had this mini course once where I created like how to become a VA. Right. And then I wanted to do other things and like killing those off over time has been the best thing I've ever done. And then even getting more and more focused on like, we only work with influencers and people in the digital product space. We don't work with service-based businesses like, you know, or brick and mortar or you know, local businesses, like saying no to that. Because if I said yes to all of that, I'd have to create process for all of that. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, I've become like the category king of a marketing agency for influencers. And that has been huge in my growth and also setting my team up for success and us being able to scale. And I, you know, every time I'm in a mastermind or a group of people or speaking, it's a huge problem for entrepreneurs not able to focus. And it's an experience that everybody kind of has to go through. But as soon as you realize, you know, how important it is, you will like you'll be really good at it. But I even still have to remind myself about this because I'll have times where I'm like, oh my gosh, this is going too slow. Like we need to add YouTube ads and Google ads like right now. And I want to do this. And then I'll have to bring myself back and be like, no, we haven't fully, you know, even capitalized and done our full potential on what we're even offering right now. So, you know, ask yourself, like, if I put more of my effort into my marketing or my delivery or my sales, would I grow my business with how it is right now? And I think sometimes it's like the boring work that you have to do of like, building that real company. And so that's been huge for me. And I have also seen that happen to so many other people. I think it's a common trend with visionary entrepreneurs to have too much going on. And if you can focus, it's really powerful and focus and execute. And then the second thing would definitely be like investing in my team and the processes and systems on my team and getting myself out of the day-to-day as much as possible. Like it's been a really big, amazing learning experience of realizing that I don't have to be involved at all with client accounts. Like even a year ago, I would sit there and say, nobody could ever do client strategy calls with me, like without me. That's so, you know, because I felt like every call is a little bit different. They have a different business, they have different products. And so how is somebody going to be able to think like I think intuitively like that? And it was pointed out to me, you know, from a coach, like you can write a process and you can do that. And so as soon as I did that and just like, have pulled myself out of the day-to-day, it's definitely exploded our business. And it's not easy to do that, but it's necessary to get to the next level.
Mm-hmm. And I know in one of the episodes that you you did. You were very open about different margins and how you're making even more margins when it was just you. But now you're like looking at your company as an investor and how that changes. I want to go back to the focus piece because I think that is definitely, that's a massive part. And I wrote a couple notes down here. So I'll start with the first question is like, how do you determine the difference between a service-based business owner and an influencer? And can an influencer be a service-based business owner? And what is that? How do you guys determine that?
Yeah. I mean, like, so I consider myself an influencer with a service-based business. So I think, you know, a service-based business delivering that like digital products and services, you could still be an influencer. And it's especially if you're the face of the brand, like that is to me, an influencer is usually face of the brand. There's that connection. And I actually think for me, that's one of been a contributing factor to my growth because I'm like anti those corporate agencies. And so you get that boutique like culture experience with our team because it's trickled down from me personally versus a corporate agency, which you don't get that at all. You're just like a number. And so, yes, you can be a service business and, you know, coaches are, you could consider almost them services or, you know, funnel building agencies, marketing agencies. The ones that we don't, you know, help are more the like local service businesses or people not in the really the digital world, because there's such a learning curve there of like what to even do and how to set up the back end and the marketing plan that they're not ready to work with us. So I'm like, we just say no to those people and we usually have like a referral to send them to. Mm-hmm. Does that kind of answer that question?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that going back to when you were saying you had to like kill things off and decide that, okay, I'm not going to do this. At first, like, has it gotten easier to kill things off? And at first, what did it feel like? Just so that my audience can resonate with that. Because in the beginning, I find that you kind of almost have to do trial and error, but you have to have the discipline to say like, okay, I'm choosing and deciding this one thing versus trying to do four different things.
Yeah. I think, it obviously choose like the one thing that's one working and making money, but two that you love, like that's really important. Cause if you choose something to focus on that, you're like, oh, well it's making me money, but I hate it. Like that's not going to work out in the next 6 months. That's going to be a nightmare. So
that's burnout.
The big picture, like if you're choosing between businesses, like go that route of what do I love? What's already, you know, proven in making some money at least. And the other thing that I now know when I'm getting off focus, and it still happens. Like I just said, I literally like three or four weeks ago was like, we're adding Google and YouTube services. Like I was like, I don't know what I was thinking. I just felt like we're moving too slow. So, which people probably resonate with that, and we're not at all, but I get bored because I get like, it's so focused on, or my team is so going and pumping and like, I don't have to be involved in the client work. So sometimes I am like, what should I do? Let me go create something new. Right.
What is like the craziest idea that you've had that you're just like, okay, no.
Yeah. I don't even know. Like I had that idea of like, we'll add Google and YouTube, which we will someday, but we're not ready. And then I was also like, we're going to start going after corporate clients. And it's like, why?
Yeah.
For brand awareness. So, you know, that type of stuff. Like, but I'm pretty good at saying no to other business ideas, but it happens within your own business too, whether it's adding another service or trying to, you know, expand in a different way. And so, and I just actually went through getting really clear about who we're working with. And if you know, that podcast where I talked about the 1 to 3 million change for me, which was actually getting more clear with the high level clients that we're working with. And that was a huge change because I was saying no to a lot of people that would come work with me for $2,000 a month. Right. And so it's like, man, I'm saying no to, you know, $10,000, $15,000 a month of income. And that sucks because we all want to make that money. But I realize and I can see now our client retention rate's at 97% because we're working with only the right clients. And so in the long run, you make more money, but it is hard to say no to opportunity and money. And it's just a discipline that I really think you have to keep coming back to month over month and look at like, what are we all working on in the company? Is it focused on the same thing? Are we doing any black ops here of like random projects? And that's been really important for my team too. And as a leader, like my direct reports, I will spend time being like, yeah, that's a good idea, but that's not priority. I want you to do this first. We can maybe look at it next month. And so I've had to be that because with high performers, they'll be like, yeah, we can do that. And we can add this project, no problem. And then you know, nothing really gets done and people are stressed and burn out. And so it will constantly be there, I think, especially when you get bored and you pulled yourself out of the day to day and you're like, okay, I need a new project. I need some overwhelm. I need to cause myself some overwhelm because I'm bored.
I mean, that is so, it is definitely something that like is maybe not, what am I trying to say? Like, it's not necessarily like, unless you're super aware, I don't know if people realize that they're doing it. And for me even too, like I had found that if I have white space on my calendar and I'm like, eh, I'm not really launching anything actively. Like I could probably squeeze something in here. And it was just this, wherever it came from. And I've done a lot of like inner work, but it is true. Like getting comfortable with having space on the calendar to actually breathe and to see like going back and allowing yourself to optimize. And maybe it's not immediate cash, but giving yourself that space. You had said something. You said black ops. Did I catch that right?
Yeah. That's what we call it when you try to go like add a new project or something. Like are you doing black ops of like a project that's not, you know, the company's not on the same page with? And well, we have our waterfall, what we call, and so that sets our 30-day company goals.
Okay.
And so if it's not on the waterfall, like we can't work on it that month is basically how it, you know, so you can't come up with a project mid-month. I mean, in some cases, it was like an urgent thing you could. What do you mean?
A project for a client or a project for your...
No, more internal. So our waterfall is all like our operations projects, like marketing, sales, like anything we're working on internal. Our clients are pretty set like with what we do every day for them. And so then I have, you know, my internal team of like the growth side of things. And so that's what the waterfall has on it. And so if it's not on there, unless it's like an urgent thing, you can't work on it, which is really powerful because then everybody on the team is working towards the same thing and things get done and we make a lot of progress versus, you know, random projects and not, you know, also team members want to be clear on priority and they want to be clear on like, what's the most important thing for me to do? Like, what should I be working on today? And they want to feel that, you know, energy of like getting things done and moving towards a bigger picture of something is really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And being able to have that vision. When you first started investing in the team and you were able to outsource, was there any sort of, what was the experience like when things started going off of your plate and you had more time freeing up? Was there guilt or was there like, what is this newfound time? What do I do with it? Which kind of goes back into the like, shiny ball syndrome idea, but what was that emotional experience for you?
I mean, you almost get addicted to it, honestly, because for me, like I had spent, I mean, a year ago, if you looked at my calendar, I was on the phone, like pretty much the whole, or on Zoom for like, you know, I work about 6 or 7 hours a day with my kids. So then I was pretty much on Zoom all day. And for me, that's so draining. Like I started to actually not enjoy it because I don't want to do sales calls all day. I don't want to do, like, if anyone has done those, you know how draining they are to like show up with that energy. It's like being on camera all day. So once I got that taken away, like I never wanted to go back. And there are times where I'm like uncomfortable because I'm like, I don't have anything to work on today. And like, I don't know what to do. And in those times, like the best thing to do is like read or just go for a walk with no electronics, because as you get up levels, the decision-making fatigue is real. And so it's like some days when I don't have that white space and I have all these people coming to me for questions, even if it's a small question, it's like, yeah. Oh my gosh, like I can't think of the solution to another question right now. And so you need to give yourself space because that's when like good ideas come or you realize like there's a gap. But if you're so buried in the day to day, you can't see farther than like next week. And I think that's been one of the biggest changes for me is I can plan for our company and say like, okay, in 2020, we're doing this. And before I could never do that because I was so drowning in the day to day that like, I literally couldn't see farther than like 3 days ahead of me. Cause it was like, just get here to my desk, do my work, go through my calendar. That's my day. And now I can be more of that visionary of like where we're going in the bigger picture.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I, for anyone who's tuning in, who's thinking like, you know, they're working the corporate job and I still think it's important to, even though you may not want to give yourself space, even if it's 30 minutes, if you spend, I don't know, let's say like 2 hours a day working on your business, make sure that one of those days is still time for you to get that space and to see that it's not something that you have to wait until you're like of a certain level or income, yeah. because it's, if you build that habit now, it's going to be so much easier when, as you grow. So what has been the hardest thing that you've had to say no to outside of like business ideas? Let's do like something in like in your business or maybe with a client that you've had to say no to that you wanted to, but you knew it was the right decision.
Yeah, it's definitely client opportunities that aren't the right fit, but that I know could be profitable. And so this actually just happened. So we had a potential client come to us and they have a restaurant franchise. So not at all like the ideal client that we normally work with. They had a massive advertising budget, like $4 million a year. So we wow. would have made a ton from this account. And we actually said yes to it. And we're onboarding, starting to onboard them. And the next day I woke up and I'm like, no, like this is not right. This is not our ideal client. Like we have to say no, because if I give this to my team, they're going to freak out. Like we're already busy with what the load we have right now with influencers, to give them something new and be like, okay, let's strategize. Like we have no processes for how to run ads for a franchise and the strategy, and we're going to have to figure that out. And we could figure it out and it would be profitable, but it's not, it would take away from that, whoever that ads manager is that got that account. It would, you know, frustrate them. And so we said, yes, we were like onboarding them and, you know, they're paying our new rates, which are good, and going to pay a percentage of ad spend on a huge ad spend. And so I woke up and was like, nope, we have to say no. Email them, so sorry, but like we're not the right fit. And we actually like found a referral for them and sent them there. But that literally happened last week. And so those are really hard, because that would have been, I mean, I don't know, probably a six-figure a year amount of money from a client. Yeah. And I just know that every yes is a no to something else. So whether you can see it or not, if you say yes to the wrong fit or a wrong opportunity, and I've done that with speaking, I've done that with, you know, events that I don't need to be at because I have that kind of like FOMO of like, well, it could be good or it could not. And so I've gotten really strict with that, because my time is the most valuable thing and my team's time is the most valuable thing. And so if I'm throwing, that would be like a black ops client at them, because we have no processes for that, you know? So that's the hardest thing though, because it's money that you're saying no to, and it's a good amount of money, and you know, we could be profitable and succeed with it, but it's not the right fit.
Yeah. What are there, so you were talking like using the example of speaking opportunities, is there like a protocol that you follow? And it doesn't have to just be with speaking, but obviously like are they a ideal customer that you want to work with is obviously the first thing. But in terms of speaking, like how do you assess if it's worth your time or energy, and if you say yes to it or no to it?
Honestly, if the audience is the right fit, if I could A, help them with my information if they need it, and I wouldn't have to, you know, write like a brand new speech, because I definitely have like my speeches that I want to bring to the right audience. So that, and then, you know, if the person asking me to speak is someone like, if they're, for example, attracting speakers who could be our potential client or who I would want to network with, but the audience is a little more beginner, I'd be okay with that. Mm-hmm. But it's really about like, do I want to put myself in front of that audience? Is that energy worth it for me? Is it worth it for the audience? Is it going to serve them? And you have to kind of really think about that. And there's been too many times, especially as, you know, I don't have tons and tons of speaking experience. So in the beginning, you just want to say yes to everything because you want the footage and you want to just get, you know, get your foot in the door with some testimonials of speaking, which is fine. I think you have to kind of go through that with everything. Like I had to do that with clients, say yes to any client so I could get the experience and then move to the next level. But at some point, you have to come back and check yourself and be like, okay, like this is getting a little out of hand. I need to have some boundaries here.
Right. And yeah, same, like, so much in the beginning. And that's where I think a lot of people get stuck, is that it's that indecision where, okay, should I say yes? Should I say no? I don't know. And then it kind of goes into this rabbit hole where it's like, just make a decision and then move on with it. And then especially in the beginning, like collecting that data and that experience is going to allow you to be make a more informed decision down the road. I'm a major, massive proponent of like taking massive action, especially in the beginning, because you can't iterate something that you haven't created already. And you have to give yourself space and time to learn like what went wrong and or what went right and what didn't work and all that stuff. What is currently a really big area of, I don't know, growth, opportunity, improvement? Like, what are you personally working on that is like a personal development, personal growth space for you?
I'm constantly working on myself as a leader and leading my team, because it's an area that I've never run a $3 million company before. Yeah. And so I don't know what I'm doing some days. And so I'm consuming a lot of books and content and surrounding myself with people who have done what I'm doing and mentors who can, you know, give me advice or give me that check on like, hey, you're not, this is a black ops project or whatever I, you know, need. And so for me personally, it's like consistently one, focusing on me as a leader, but then also building my leadership team, because I know that for me to get to 10 million, I have to have a level below me of leaders that can run departments without my help. And that's really hard to do, because you have to build a level of people like under you that can manage almost the size company that I have right now, right? So it's like, and you have to build those relationships and find the right people, and it's not easy. And so I'm working really hard on that right now. And so I will do like leadership trainings with the team. And I really try to, you know, team culture is so important. And I didn't know that 2 years ago. Like, I was just the person that's like, just don't you want to work like and do your job like I do, you know? And employees are different than entrepreneurs, and you have to make people feel really safe and like they matter and that their voice is heard in the company. And so I really work on that, and I go through material to learn that, because I don't know how to run a team. Like, I didn't even have a job where like I could witness what it was like in any type of a company. So it's all new to me. It does, some of it comes naturally, but I'm constantly working on that. And I also know to get to the next level, I need to have a leadership team that's really solid.
Yeah, so good. Thank you for sharing that. As we kind of like wind down, I want to spend just a little bit of time on, you know, talking about Facebook ads. And I think, like I said, a lot of the listeners are either in the early stages, in the beginning, where they might just be dabbling into Facebook ads. What is like one piece of advice that you would have if people are thinking about getting into Facebook advertising?
Yeah, I think like my best advice is don't get overwhelmed with it. And the one thing that everybody can do is show up online with some form of content. So if you can do a Facebook Live every week, great. And then take that and put some ad spend behind it so that you can show it to new people. And if you can just start there as you learn and you figure out things, and you don't have to spend a lot of money, you could spend $20 promoting a video to new audiences. And you'll be building up that following and that warm audience so that when you're ready, you have that. But I think before you're ready for Facebook ads and like high level and like spending a lot of money, you need to make sure your offering and your messaging is really nailed in. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people miss that. They like think Facebook ads is going to save them, but Facebook ads won't save unclear messaging or an unclear, unproven offer. And so like your work is probably in the organic relationship building side of things at first, but you can also show up online and start building that following and practicing in front of video, and especially if you want to be an influencer. And so I think that's the best first step if you're, you know, new, and just being consistent with your valuable content and building that tribe of people around you, and then proving your back end and your offer and your messaging, because that's key. You can't run ads until you have that.
Yeah, that was my mistake. And I've shared it before on the podcast where I say last year or 2 years ago for the She Did It Her Way Summit, I had hired someone, it paid him a monthly retainer, and then they ran Facebook ads. But it definitely, you know, in hindsight, I'm like, what the heck was I thinking? Like, now that I know what I know, I'm like, that was crazy. And I wish I would have, you know, found the message that you just shared about, you know, really vetting out and spending time and energy getting out there, producing weekly or biweekly consistent content, and figuring out like what is your funnel and or like what is the offer and does it resonate with people before necessarily putting a bunch of money behind it and to find out that it doesn't work, you know? So good. Okay. Let's go into a little bit of a rapid fire round. So what is one of your favorite pieces of software that you guys use?
Yeah. So honestly, I don't use like hardly any software, but my team, I don't like logging in and learning new systems, but my team uses Asana. We use Slack. We use Voxer. We use HubSpot. Actually, is a newer one that we're using for not only sales, but client CRM management. And it's working really well. So those are probably our core ones that we use as a team. I try to stay as minimum software as possible because I just don't want to have to keep training the new people coming on if needed into the software.
I love Asana. And what is like your favorite, what has been your favorite celebration of a milestone and what was it?
I should probably be better at celebrating milestones. I feel like you get to the milestone and the journey was a lot more fun. And you're like, okay, what's next?
Yeah. No kidding.
Definitely signing some of our really big influencer clients was a massive celebration. And so, you know, when I get a referral and we work with Amy Porterfield, Rachel Hollis now, and like getting those referrals and then signing them and meeting them is a huge milestone. It just proves to me that I focus so much on my delivery and what we deliver to clients that it's being valued in a way that I could never have imagined.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. What's been one of your favorite books? It could be business or it could be, you know, fiction, nonfiction.
Yeah. So I just read Powerful by, she ran the whole HR department at Netflix for 14 years. And it was amazing on team culture and kind of a new way of looking at it versus like the corporate way and the innovative things Netflix was doing. So it was really good. And it's a pretty easy read. There was a lot of takeaways there for me and just kind of like how you build that culture of people who are willing to like collaborate basically, because that's the future, is not the dictation leadership, but the collaborative leadership and honoring people's experience and that they might have better suggestions than you as the leader.
Mm, nice. Okay. What is the best $100 or less purchase you've made in your business or personal life?
Good question. Best $100. I mean, I don't know anything that small. Like I'm thinking team, that's the best purchase I've ever made. And like house help for sure is the best. So like when I spend, you know, $100 for the day for my nanny, like that is the best purchase I could do, or like my house help. So I'm not a big stuff buyer. So like that's all like, you know, cheaper stuff, but my help that buying back my time is always the best investment.
Yeah. And I think some people underestimate like the power of even $50 and what it could do hiring a VA in their business and think that, oh, what do I need a VA for? But if you can get 3 hours of your time back and pay that VA $10, $15 an hour for 3 times a week, or 3 hours a week, like that's a lot. So never want anyone to underestimate that. So the last question I have is, where can my listeners find out more about you and then also your podcast, because it is rocking.
Yeah. So hirschmarketing.com is my website, which has tons of resources, our monthly report that we send out. And then my podcast is Hirsch Marketing Underground. We release an episode every Tuesday, Thursday. And like you said, they're super bite-sized so that people can consume them. I give a ton in my podcast.
Yes.
Because I'm really clear that my ideal audience doesn't want to do it themselves. So I don't mind giving away everything for people who want to do it themselves. So I give a ton out. And so my podcast is an awesome resource. And I also do share the team building stuff because I spend a lot of my days doing that. And so, and people love it when I share it. So it's awesome.
Yes, we do. I will say that as a listener. So Emily, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really, really appreciate it. I know my listeners are going to get so much value and be inspired by this. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
If you enjoyed today's podcast episode, you can head on over to shedidithowaypodcast.com where you can access the entire vault of She Did It Her Way podcast episodes and more information all about how to make the ultimate leap from your 9 to 5. And if you enjoyed today's episode, I would be so grateful if you headed on over to iTunes and left a review letting me know what you love about the She Did It Her Way podcast. Until next time, keep doing it your way.